Welcome to Theology Simply Profound, a podcast of Reformed Forum. This is episode 153.
There's a certain amount of anxiety that comes whenever we're trying to share the things of the Lord with anyone. It could be a relative. In fact, a relative is usually the hardest to speak with. Or a coworker. Should we talk about the gospel at work? Do we need to wait till break time? Or is that still off limits? What happens when you have a friend who is not a Christian, and then, when you finally start sharing the gospel with that person, they stop being your friend? We walk the line of wanting to share the things of the Lord and trying not to offend. In case you're wondering, this is true of most Christians. When Faithful and Christian were in Vanity Fair, they didn't try to offend anyone, and yet it led to their imprisonment and Faithful's death. But as we'll learn today, there were some who listened, and they still listened, even after they saw what the gospel can cost. What we can't see is the internal working of the Holy Spirit in the lives of those whom we witness to. The same friend who disowned us because he was offended by the gospel, years later might be brought to Christ, and the Lord used you to plant the seed. In the end, the Lord will save his people. There is nothing, not even martyrdom, that can stop that.
Welcome back to another episode of Theology Simply Profound. My name is Bob Tarullo. I serve as pastor here at Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church. And here with me, as always, is Rob McKenzie. And Rob is an MDiv student at Reformed Theological Seminary in Orlando. Hey, Rob.
Hi.
How's it going, man?
Oh, great. It's good to be back.
Good to be back.
Yes.
From where?
Oh, I was in the Caribbean.
In the Caribbean?
Yep, in the Caribbean.
I see the glow.
Treading water. That's all I did. That's all I can afford.
Treading water, yeah. In the Caribbean. Did you have anyone with you? Were you on vacation? Were you selling books in the Caribbean to sharks? Or
trying to think. I didn't sell any books to any sharks. No.
Just a few guppies.
I did have some family with me. Went on family vacation. Now I'm back.
Now you're back.
A little sunburned, but not so much.
I apologize if you hear any dog barking here in a moment or two. My doggy is being a little loud at the moment or so.
Yes, Fluffy is a happy dog.
Fluffy is a Tippy.
Sorry, I've been gone. I forgot.
You forgot that this is the animal that eats.
Well, actually, the head moves so quickly, I thought it was Fluffy from Harry Potter, which is, of course, the three-headed dog.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah.
She can bite so quick.
She can bite. Are we back with... wait a minute. Yeah, you introduced this last time as...
Yes, this is Christian.
The Pilgrim's Progress.
Yeah, A New Hope. Yeah.
Help me out with that one.
What, a Star Wars reference?
Yeah. Well, what are we talking about today?
Oh, you want the actual... thought you wanted to know what the reference was to.
No, I know what the reference is but how does it relate?
Well, because, of course, Christian was in Vanity Fair with his friend Faithful, who was martyred, and Christian is left. You know, we don't actually know how Christian gets out. I mean,
we're not
given really good specifics. But when he leaves with a convert. And we've talked about this last week that, he and Faithful went when they got to Vanity Fair. They weren't trying to, here we are, you know, they weren't Paul on Mars Hill. Now we're going to spread the gospel. And they just wanted to get out of there. When they got in, they didn't want anybody to notice them, although they stuck out like sore thumbs, and everybody noticed them, and people were engaging with them. And as they talked, people knew, you know, this Vanity Fair was built on the road, that the Christians have to travel.
Right.
It's not the first Christians that have come through Vanity Fair.
Right.
And so there's an antagonism already there.
Yeah, the enemy established this as a means to to turn Christians away, to pause their journey, hopefully forever, and to keep them there. And there's a lot of people living there, and they've got this fair, Vanity Fair. Yeah. There's the famous Vanity Fair. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that. Mm-hmm. How many people in Vanity Fair maybe were former pilgrims?
Exactly.
And they would probably be the most antagonistic.
Yeah, absolutely.
The ones that would probably call for the actual martyrdom of faithful.
Right.
But as they were put in cages, we know, and but as they were, that's when they were witnessing, I guess you could say, because they're in cages and people were mocking them. People were asking them, like Jesus was being asked certain things. You know, if you're Jesus, if you're the Messiah, you know, come down off the cross. Mm-hmm. I mean, because didn't he have the power to do that?
Right.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
And so who knows what they were saying to Christian faithful. But they were there for a while.
Right, but the fact of what was happening to them, that in and of itself was a witness. That there was a conviction of principle. I mean, a conviction about a truth claim, we might say. And they were not willing to let that go in order to be rid of the being caged and what eventually does happen to faithful dying.
Right.
And that's, you know, what, whether it be tyrannical governments or whatever, that's what they want you to do. They want you to relinquish your claim of Christ. Mm-hmm. They want you to get rid of and to turn away from the Christianity. You know, like we see it in various countries right now, and the charges is what against the Christian typically for being an enemy of the state, enemy of what our values are. And you can see that in Pilgrim's Progress too. You're an enemy of what we stand for here in Vanity Fair. And you're an enemy of these things. And that's why we're going to put you on trial, which is mockery.
Yeah.
And then, which, you know, we cause the laughter.
The very impartial jury that was
exactly,
there.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why they're there. And then they're very suffering. Mm-hmm. Even if there weren't any words, we can assume there were words, right? I mean, it's a story, right? We can assume
it's mentioned that they had conversations.
There's interaction, But even if there wasn't, their very testimony is that they're willing to suffer for the gospel, for Christianity.
Right. You know, it makes me wonder for those who want to be very pragmatic in how they set up their worship services and their outreach ministries. They're always looking at they'll take a poll. Mm. What do the people want? How can we reach this culture? You know, you hear this more and more recently about, you know, well, these young people, they're growing up and they're leaving the church. How can we keep people to leave the church or to stay in the church? And, what can we give them? Well, we've seen it.
Yeah.
What happens? You know, you get
stadium
seating, rock bands, short sermons.
Don't forget smoke machines.
All the silly. Yeah. I mean, we can pull out some really ridiculous examples, and they're all over YouTube.
Oh yeah.
But then there's also the not so ridiculous examples, but they're still trying to do the same kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you want to grow your church, have a martyrdom in your church.
I want to talk about one of the ridiculous things because I just read one a couple weeks ago.
Go ahead.
There was the guy who was on YouTube and there was the guy that kind of like came, he wanted to, give an illustration of the return of Christ, I think it was.
Okay.
And it was him flying in.
Oh my goodness.
Being levitated somehow to the pulpit and it was videotaped and all that. But then he needed to outdo himself. So what did he do? He jumped out of an airplane for another one.
Yeah.
Right? He lived.
Okay,
I see your face. You're like, oh no.
Well, does it?
No, well, it didn't end well. Okay. But in the article, right, he jumps out and he's given the sermon.
Well, he's skydiving.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And everyone's out there like no one knew that this was going to be happening in the church. The church, I think,
was
some
it like
leaders
a video
knew.
Screen? Was,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay, okay.
And then they all come out and look at him, and But he misses his landing mark,
did the chute open?
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
everything happened. He landed properly. I mean, he wasn't. It was a professional holding him. You know, kind
tandems.
Of things.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and but somehow I remember the comment that he somehow like. Dented. He landed, I think, on his wife's car, and he dented the $200,000 car that he bought for his wife.
Oh
Sorry. And I was reading through this and it was just stated so plainly, not just the fact of what he did, but then that he had just recently purchased a $200,000 car for his wife. And I was beside myself that it was just said so matter of factly. This is the way it is.
I do think that there is, I don't know if it's an Acts or maybe I think it's Peter, must be first or second Peter, that says that Christ will return to the Bugatti Veyron.
Yeah.
I think that's in there somewhere. It's in the Greek. I'm sorry. I'm not going to, now you got me going. What audacity.
I know.
The idea to come in, I'm going to represent Christ in the second coming by levitating into the church. Buddy, you're not Christ.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It was pretty wild and foolish.
Yeah.
And I heard someone else refer, not to this specifically, but you have to, it's like a one-upmanship. Now you got to, now you have to do something bigger. Now you got to do something better. And, you know, it's like you're in the competitive world of consumerism for who's got the best theatrics for a church service. I mean, it's like a circus now, literally.
Yeah.
Because you got to outdo the other church in order to get more people. That's not the way of worship, right? I mean, we worship based upon what God tells us he wants.
Right.
And that's what we do. We worship God according to his ways.
Right.
Anyway, that was a little tangent. I know.
Wow, we're even holding that one in. That got me going. But that's the thing. And what I was trying to get at was just the mentality of that. Just the idea that in order to get converts, we have to basically have bad entertainment because that's what it ends up being. And here Christian and faithful, their witness is mockery and imprisonment and ridicule and eventually death. And someone might say, well, this is a fictitious story, but Bunyan is writing from prison having, you know, he suffered mockery. It is humiliating to be in prison. Even if you're there for a righteous reason, it still can be humiliating. The guards are going to look at you and think, you know, you're just another criminal. You're just another prisoner. But he was also with people that we know were martyred. They were imprisoned for the same, he didn't get a license, unlicensed preacher, and other men had also been imprisoned with him, and they would be martyred. So he's watched this happen, and yet he knows, and of course we talked about this before, that the blood of the martyrs, it builds the church.
It's martyrdom, the seat of the church.
It's the seat of the church, because it's the power of God that brings people. And it is foolishness to the world to think that as Christians are persecuted, that God would add Christians. But that's what he does.
Yeah, he does do that. And this story, and what we're referring to here, and I think it'd be good to review just this real quickly. It says, as stage 7 begins, he says, "Now I saw in my dream," Bunyan, this is how he begins, "Now I saw in my dream that Christian went not forth alone," right? So Faithful just died, so we would think he is alone.
Right.
"That Christian was not forth alone," or "went not forth alone. For there was one whose name was Hopeful, being made so by the beholding of Christian and Faithful in their words and behavior in their sufferings at the fair, who joined himself unto him, and entering into a brotherly covenant, told him that he would be his companion. Thus one died to make testimony to the truth, and another rises out of his ashes to be a companion with Christian. This Hopeful also told Christian that there were many more of the men in the fair that would take their time and follow after." Now, this reminded me of this, the really, I think it's really well known, famous between story of Ridley and Latimer, right? Suffering under Queen Mary, Bloody Mary, and refusing to acknowledge the Pope as the authority. And they go to the stake, being burned at the stake. And the famous line from Latimer to Ridley is, "Be of good comfort, Mr. Ridley, and play the man. We shall this day light such a candle by God's grace in England as I trust never shall be put out." Mm-hmm. Right. So they're like in their burning the light of the world. Right. I mean, we're here lighting the candle of the gospel in our sufferings, in our being burned at the stake. We are the candle of the gospel going forth.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's, it's such a horrible image in one sense,
right.
But it's also such a, an image that it's like, wow, you know, we have been, given the privilege not only to believe in the Lord Jesus Christ, but to suffer with him.
Right.
And that's what Paul tells us in Philippians. And in that suffering, there is a testimony, there is a witness that went done when done well, right, is what we have with like the Christians under Mary in many, many instances, what we have in the example and the illustration, of course, that we're given here in Bunyan's story. But that's how it's been throughout the years, right? You hear about those stories, you know, some of them Fox's Book of Martyrs and things like that, but you hear about them in, you know, the literature that we have, extant literature that we have from the early church and such. And that's, God uses, persecution. It is through many trials and tribulations that you must go to enter the kingdom of heaven. And so that's how the Lord works these things. And you can even, I mean, I think there's stories, at least I've heard stories, of, you know, about people in the Middle East when ISIS was coming through and just killing, lopping off heads.
Yeah.
Some of them Christians, some not, right?
Right.
But those who are non-Christians looking at the Christians and how they died, becoming Christians.
Right.
In their martyrdom.
Right.
And then them dying.
Right.
Right afterward, because they were now holding on to Jesus Christ as their own. Anyway.
Well, and of course, the most famous example of this is Paul himself when he at the martyrdom of Stephen.
Yeah, you know, there you go. Thank you.
John, you know, well, and
of course it is. I just, you know, I don't think of those things.
Well, and then the one I kept thinking of, actually, I just thought of that at the end, but was John Huss, who was burned at the stake and said that, you know, that you kill his name. Huss meant goose.
Yeah,
and he said, "You burn this goose, and out will rise a swan." And so that was given to Luther. Was called the swan. That's why you see a swan, and it really is incredible. And it's an amazing plan and story of God that he is showing those who are his enemies that do your worst,
right?
Because in the end, my people will be vindicated.
Yeah.
And this kind of way, so here Christian comes out with a convert hopeful will say when they're talking that there's others actually back in Vanity Fair that also believed, but they just need a little more time before they leave. But he is sure that they will come as well.
Yeah. I think that's when I read this hopeful also told Christian that there were many more of the men in the fair that would take their time and follow after. Is that what you're referring to? That statement there? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it's, who knows how many, I mean, it's kind of a fictitious story,
Of course,
but still
the
martyrdom of faithful rises up Christians and it's glorious to us because we don't understand. And that's where in my opening, I was trying to say, look, we quake with fear sometimes, the idea of witnessing. You know, I mean, I fly a lot, so there's always that.
Sitting next to someone on a plane.
And you get that, you know, do I witness?
Do I initiate this conversation?
You know, I noticed you had a skull tattoo. That reminds me of death.
Have you ever thought about your own death?
And you know, there's times that I've gotten into conversations with people that I have been able to witness. But there's other times when you don't, you know, nobody wants to talk to each other, and you get in there and they put on their mask and they go to sleep, or I go to sleep because I'm so tired.
Yeah.
I mean, the opportunities will come from the Lord. We don't have to, you know, always try to wedge it in there, because I think, and maybe it's just the way I grew up, that is how we're taught, that you always have to find a way. If you meet somebody and you don't witness to them, their blood is on your hands. And so.
Yeah, that's wrong.
It is. Okay. It is wrong. Because it, for one thing, it doesn't rely on the sovereignty of God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pray for the opportunities, but don't worry that if you don't find that opportunity, that now you're the cause of them dying, going to hell.
Right.
But a lot of people grew up that way.
Yeah, and that's sad. I think that places a burden on people that is not a burden that God wants his people to have on them. Yeah.
But also understand that if you get in conversations with people and they might mock you, they might, you know, again, you might lose friends. People who are Christians, when given the opportunity, might have a great 2-hour discussion with somebody mm-hmm. and think, man, that was great. And they're really asking great questions. And then you find out that person just went on Facebook and said all sorts of nasty things about you, of how you're a religious nut and mm-hmm. you know, all this other stuff. And now you've lost that friend and you feel humiliated. Well, are any humiliation, any real insult that was given, is actually not against you. It's against Christ. And he will be vindicated in the end.
We take it very personally, and that's a normal thing. Yeah. It's a normal thing to do. And we just, I think, you know, to a certain extent, we just need to remind ourselves of that. You just said this is, we're doing this unto the Lord. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a bold humility that we take with us when we walk. And it doesn't mean every place you go, like you said, that there's going to be a conversation about it. So it's just, yeah.
It's interesting reading this section is that, and I think it's a little subtle. I actually kind of wish Bunyan had actually developed this a little more.
Okay.
Is Christian comes out with hopeful. And Christian, he's obviously going to be discipling. There's a teacher-student relationship that's kind of developing right at the beginning. It's already been there mm-hmm. in Vanity Fair. Obviously, he was converted under the tutelage of Christian and Faithful. But there was kind of that relationship with Faithful and Christian a little bit.
Right,
you know,
right.
You saw that Faithful was a little more mature than Christian.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. Faithful was like a mentor to Christian, and now you have that natural growth, right?
Right.
The mentor dies as a martyr, and now the student becomes the mentor
right.
to Hopeful.
Right. And it's just, to me, that I think it's subtle, but I think it's there.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're, you know, we're given that as something we're meant to see, especially mm-hmm. as thus one died to make testimony to the truth and another rises out of it in the ashes to be a companion with Christian, right? You see the movement from one to another purposefully set before it, but it would have been enjoyable to see him explore that relationship a little bit more in the story. But instead he goes and introduces some new characters.
Right. Yes. Well, one in particular,
one
that we're going to talk about today. And I tell you, I this guy's great. I love his town. I might book a vacation there next year just to check it. It sounds like a really interesting town. So they meet somebody named Fair Speech, but
no, they meet,
meet Byans.
Yes.
But he won't tell them his name.
Yeah. Well, they think his name is Byans. And then later,
Christian figures it out, but at first he won't tell him, which is interesting because once it's revealed, he kind of reacts, he doesn't like the name and says it's a nickname, but I don't think that's true. I think that is his name. He just knows that, really, he's got a bad reputation and he wants to get away from his reputation. But yes, yeah, so they meet, you know, he wants to walk with them. I mean, he's on the road, right? He's a pilgrim. He's a Christian. He just wants to walk with them as they go along the way and have discussions. What's wrong with that?
Well, nothing's wrong with that, except, I mean, that's a great thing to do, right? Yeah. With a fellow Christian. But the way that, the conversation goes, they realize that there's something off about Mr. Byans.
Yeah.
So we learn that he's going to the Celestial City with them. He told them that he came from the town of Fair Speech, that he was going to the Celestial City, but told them not his name. And then they ask from Fair Speech, is there any that be good live there? Is what Christian says to right. Byans.
It's like what they would say about Crete, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Or Galilee, right? Did anything good come out of Galilee, right? Yeah. Right? You know, Jesus.
That's true.
Yes, you know, Byans says, of course there are. I'm from there.
And he starts, he ends up talking about his family. Because he's a lot of his family.
This
is from
one of those
Byans.
More comic
this
parts.
Is one of the more comic parts. So his family live in Fair Speech, and most notably Lord Turnabout, Lord Time Server, Lord Fair Speech, Mr. Smooth Man, Mr. Facing Both Ways, Mr. Anything, Parson Two Tongues. By the way, it's Byan's uncle, so really close to him. Byan's grandfather was a waterman who looked one way and wrote another, which is how he received his own estate.
Yeah. And I got most of my estate by the same occupation.
Yeah.
Right. That's Baez.
Baez does the same himself. Thing.
Yeah. He's a waterman who looks one way, but rows in a different direction.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think there might be a reference to taking bribes and helping. There's people who are doing nasty things and he kind of helps them out and gets, makes his money that way. You can make good money doing that. But he has a wife, which is interesting. She's not with him. But she's a very virtuous woman that needs to be understood. Her name is Lady Feigning.
Lady Feigning.
and she's very good. And both she and Baez they're able to speak with both pauper and prince. See how they say that they're very liberal because they're able to do that. They're no respecter of persons, you know, and they never stride against wind and tide. But they're always most zealous when religion goes in his silver slippers. They love to walk with him in the street if the sun shines and the people applaud him. Love that line.
Kind of sounds like, these things are good as long as people recognize it and it brings attention to me and they laud me. I mean, that's... Yeah.
So these people, they go to the best church. They've got the best seats. Mm-hmm. They wear the best clothes. If they walk in and there's visitors sitting in their seats,
the ushers
come.
It reminds me like of, in the early 20th century, like the Rockefellers built a big, church. I can't remember the name. It's in New York City. I think that's where Harry Emerson Fosdick preached and such. Mm. And, you got the big church, you got the beautiful church. I mean, that's how a lot of church buildings were built that we really think are beautiful. But it's all about money, in this regard, and that's what this is describing, right? This is the money side of the false church, or the liberal church.
Yeah, and in his wife, because she is so she's so good and virtuous. I mean, if Baez landed on her Bugatti Veyron, she would not be upset because she understands these things happen. This is everything's about show. Everything's about. The religion that they have is a religion that tolerates, and it tolerates underhand dealings and bribes, and because the community is about the outward appearance, it's about standing, it's about how do I appear to others.
Mm-hmm.
And filtered into the church.
It's interesting. I wonder how much he's trying to. Bunyan here is speaking to sort of the nobility of England at the time.
Yeah, I think he is.
Which, in many ways, is something of a he's forecasting almost Victorian age religiosity. Where it becomes all about pomp and circumstance for the majority .
I had a friend who. We had many conversations it did begin with dispensationalism but many other things. And I still my friend and had a wonderful privilege of some discipleship with him for a long time. And he was in a mega church. And one of the conversations we had for a long time was about what does the pastorate look like? What is a pastor supposed to be?
Mm-hmm.
And he had never actually spoken with his pastor because it was a mega church and you can't talk to the pastor.
Talking to a celebrity.
But he kept telling me that this was his pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that's great. He's your shepherd. I want you to go to your shepherd and just talk to him. He said, well, you can't do that. I said, well, what do you mean? He's your shepherd. He's your pastor. You couldn't go up to him after the service because the armed security guards would surround him. And you had to make an appointment. And you may or may not be allowed. Like, you can make the appointment, but it doesn't mean you'll get it. He never got it. I told him to make an appointment. Mm-hmm. He never got it. I think maybe he might have shaken his hand one time or something like that. But, of course, they had a bunch of other pastors in the church that... eventually it filtered down over a hierarchy, and this was an independent church. So it's not taking on any kind of denomination that has some sort of hierarchy.
Yeah.
This is within an independent church, but there was a hierarchy. So there was one pastor that was on the lower tier that he could go to But this pastor didn't preach. This pastor didn't teach. He was, I think maybe he led the small group. Mm-hmm. You know, a pastor is called to shepherd.
Yeah.
And that is not what his pastor was doing. But his pastor was wealthy and had several cars and I think his own plane. And now he, my friend, would eventually leave that. I can't really call it a church.
That organization.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But how do you get there? How do you get from, I am called to be a pastor of God to the people of God. And then all you do is you preach on Sunday morning and then your armed security detail walk you out of the building so nobody can talk to you.
Yeah. I honestly have no idea how you get there. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it boggles my imagination even to think in those terms that a pastor who actually started out, let's just for the sake of argument, say he started out, you know, small church, mm-hmm. and then it just built up over time. And then he eventually got to the point where he needed all of these other pastors and armed security.
Yeah.
I would hope that someone would not allow themselves to get there. But when people do, that's just sin.
Yeah.
I mean, sin that allows you to think yourself so high and deserving of such things that you are unwilling to lower yourself and be a true to your calling of a pastor and to be involved with your people's lives. If it's so big that you can't do that, then plant the churches, plant them elsewhere, make them smaller so that you can be involved with your people in your people's lives and pray for them particularly and minister to them particularly. So if you were asking, how do you get there? I have no idea how someone can get there that started out thinking truly that I want to be a pastor. I want to be a guy who serves the Lord by serving his people. Buggles my mind. I couldn't get the right word out.
You can only say it in an accent.
It buggles my mind.
Of course, the families at Westminster take turns washing your car.
Oh, stop but, it. Don't even joke. not after that.
No,
we take care of people's cats.
That's right. You took care of my cats. Thank you very much. The cats were alive when we got there.
And good. I'm so glad. I had fed them at least a week before.
They had been gnawing on some furniture, but other than that, they were fine. No.
This is the
impression I'm getting from this town is that everything, the church, the people, it is all about status. It's all about how do I look good? And, you know, by any means possible, mm-hmm. is this man.
Well, and he even describes the place as being wealthy.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's not that we have to even assume that. He describes it as a place of wealth and a place of, you know, he's a gentleman. There's a sense of lauding it over others, a sense that I am better than others, mm-hmm. as well as all of these others. I mean, they have to be. I mean, these are the lords. And one of these persons is Lord Fairspeech, from whose ancestors the town first took its name, right?
Yeah.
And you have the lineage now of being established in this. And these are all my friends. I have this kind of acquaintance. Mm-hmm. And that says everything about me.
Yeah, so Christian figures out, this is where he leans over to Hopeful. And he's like, you know what? I know this guy. This is Byens of Fair Speech. And then he says, he's the knavest knave of the land, which just, wow, that's quite the title there.
There you go.
And which is why he didn't, this is his reputation. This is why Byens actually wanted his name not known. He didn't want them to know his reputation.
Yeah, he says, then Christian stepped a little to the side to his fellow Hopeful, saying, it runs in my mind that this is one Byens of Fair Speech. And if it be he, we have as very a knave in our company as dwelleth in all these parts. Then said Hopeful, ask him, methinks, he should not be ashamed of his name. So Christian came up with him again and said, sir, You talk as if you knew something more than all the world doth, and if I take not my mark amiss, I deem I have half a guess of you. Is not your name Mr. Byans of Fair Speech? This is not my name.
Yeah.
But indeed it is a nickname that is given me by some that cannot abide me, and I must be content to bear it as a reproach, as other good men have borne theirs before me. Right? So now he takes
Well, it's interesting.
As
the
a
contrast.
Suffering. I'm a victim.
He's a victim. Well, it's the contrast of two martyrdoms.
Yeah.
And Faith was really martyred.
Yes.
And this guy has a martyrdom complex.
Yeah, he does.
And yeah, those people, they don't understand me. They just say bad things about me. I'm really a good man. I'm really good. Well, if you know, we defend those things by our actions. You know, not that we don't all sin and we don't all fall, but you want to be a good person, we can become good by Christ and Christ alone. And his defensiveness is really good. Bunny just brings it's a really good scene, just the way he describes everything and the character that he creates.
Yeah, he does. It's an interesting episode here.
Yeah. And then, so Christian goes on and he says, because Byans still wants to go with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, why not?
I'm a Christian, you're a Christian. Why can't we walk hand in hand?
And Christian says, well, he doesn't actually say you can't go with us.
Right.
He says, look, if you want to come with us, you will have to go against wind and tide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I perceive that is against your opinion. And he says, you must also own religion in the rags as well as when it's in its silver slippers.
Yeah. He said, well, let me just read that section. Yeah. Christian says, if you will go with us, you must go against wind and tide, the which I will perceive is against your opinion. You must also own religion in his rags, as well as when in his silver slippers, and stand by him too, when bound in irons, as well as when he walketh the streets with applause.
Right.
Right. So what do we have there? We have a contrast being established, right? Mm-hmm. When things are going great and when things are going horrible, are you still the same Christian? Are you still the same professor of Jesus Christ? Or are you one raising a fist against him when things don't go the way you think they should go, when you're not being applauded, when you're not being lauded and praised and such in the streets, or have wealth beyond measure, you know?
Yeah. I mean, what if you're in a church and the church itself is going through trouble and you're showing up every week and it's not comfortable? It just happens to churches. And a lot of times people leave. A lot of times people leave the church. I mean the church as a whole. They stop going to any church, which is not the right response.
Right.
But all of a sudden, because hey, Christian says here, there are times when religion, when going to church, as we're putting it, as living the Christian life, is walking in the sunshine with silver slippers. Right. It's not as if that was a bad thing. Byans and his wife walking in the street with religion and silver slippers wasn't bad. It's the fact that that's only when they'll be religious.
Right. In and of itself. Because what you have is the response of Byans to this, which is interesting. Yeah. You know, it's not like, oh, yeah, you know, of course, you know, not like he's not like hearing the instruction. He's not saying, you know what? You're right. Yeah, we had good times, but, you know, there might be bad times.
Right.
He says, you must not impose nor lord it over my faith. Leave me to my liberty and let me go with
that.
You. Leave it to my liberty.
Right. Because we make religion what it is instead of religion or the gospel making us.
Yeah. What we ought to be.
Right. So if something bad happens in my life, I can blame God because that's not supposed to happen. Only good things are supposed to happen.
Right. Right. Christian does a great job here.
Yeah,
right?
He does. I
mean, he comes back, says, not a step further.
Yeah.
Unless you will do in what I propound as we. And then you really get the end of the man. Then said Byans, I shall never desert my old principles. Well, there you got it, right?
Yeah.
Since they are harmless and profitable.
Yes.
If I may not go with you, I must do as I did before you overtook me, even go by myself, until some overtake me that will be glad of my company. Mm. So essentially, you know what? You know what? You don't want me? Fine.
Right.
You know, go ahead. Yeah. I'm sure some other lucky guy will come alongside who will have me.
Yeah.
So you get the sense of this profitability that Christianity yeah. has had for him. And so that's, as long as there's a profitability to it for me,
right.
this is good. I can handle it.
Now, next episode, we're going to actually learn more about where that profitability comes from.
Right, right.
Why, you know, just the fact that Christian and hopeful overtook him.
Mm-hmm.
What, does this guy have a bad leg? You know, that
I mean, is he crawling?
Christian's just got out of a cage after a few weeks.
Right, right.
No, this guy was walking slowly so people could overtake him. He was wanting to find victims is what he's trying to do.
Yeah, do shh, shh.
Oh,
don't,
sorry.
Don't
yeah,
tell.
Sorry.
Don't give yeah, too don't much away.
Right, because nobody's read the book yet. but so it's just the snake. I mean, it's really the only way to put him.
Yeah.
And there are people in churches that Bunyan is describing here, and we've already said that there's a lot of nobility going on here. There's a lot of you know, people that, again, and at this time, what, you rented your pew. You rented where you sat at
yeah.
different churches.
You
did.
You paid enough money.
You had a key that unlocked your pew.
Your door. Yeah, on the pew.
Yeah, it just, I can't contemplate that. The idea of going to church like that. And there were churches that we would look at and say, these were good godly churches. And they did this.
It was a part of the practice.
Yeah.
Well, it was one, to my knowledge, it was one way of sustaining church ministry because it was money going toward it. But from our perspective, there's a sense of, you know, the audacity to that,
right.
you know, the arrogance of holding a seat for yourself
right.
when, you know, what if a pauper comes in off the street and needs a place to sit?
They could stand in the back.
Yeah.
Anyway. You know, I mean, what were they going on StubHub the night before to try to, you know, find, oh, front row's open. Nail it. Get it right there. Oh, I got
now,
up there.
I'm sure there's a little bit more history there that you know, we're making light of and not
right.
seeing at the moment. But
and we do have to be careful, and I'm saying this because I'm joking around. We have to be careful that we don't judge people within, you know, that lived 400, 500
right.
years earlier
yeah.
in how we live. Yeah. We don't judge people according to our standards. We have to really understand why they were doing these things.
Right, right. But there is a sense of what Bunyan is communicating here, and that is how wealth had infiltrated. And that, well, let's just say this, that there's a lot of what we might call cultural Christianity.
Yes.
That was, and at least what he's expressing is in the nobility and in the wealth of England at the time, and he doesn't like it, and he's trying to express in some way, you know, in this allegorical way, and try and give expression to that, and he's not happy with that, and he says, you know, that's really not Christianity at all. When you are willing to just allow wealth to be that which guides you and directs you, or the honor of it, the stature, those types of
right.
things. These things are not what Christianity is about. Right. And he's doing what he can here to communicate that, I think, in a helpful way.
Right. I mean, the pastorate is one of those positions that can be very convenient to lazy people, because you can get away with not doing what you should be doing. And unfortunately, there are examples of this. It's a good place to hide and be lazy and or just be in it for the respect.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with the eldership. There's a certain respect that comes with being an elder. It's part of it's from Christ, that it's built in. It should be. We're commanded to respect those in authority over us.
Yes, make sure you call me Domine from now on, Rob.
I told you.
There is a respect that it commands, and that's not by virtue of the man, that's by virtue of the office.
Right.
If there is any respect given to it. But, you know, it didn't give Paul any respect, I mean, among the
right.
world.
Right.
The world does not hold pastors in high esteem anymore.
Right.
There was a time, right, he was the educated guy in the room. He was the guy who that you could go to for one thing or another. There was a respect culturally And that's not the case anymore. And that respect, as at least as far as I'm understanding, is really only found within the church. And that's primarily just because he's your pastor, usually in a good congregation, and he's earned that trust and he's earned that respect, I hope. And not just because he's the pastor, because if he does a really bad job, you know, he shouldn't have your respect.
Right. And our pride will take hold of anything in our lives. Our pride will take hold of it and turn it into sin.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, you know, here, this man, Baez, he's being very honest, actually. Hey, what I'm doing is harmless. Mm-hmm. It's profitable. I'm not going to change. Why would I change? I like the church. The church is great when it's good, when it's profitable to me. It has to do with what is our motivation for being a church? Is it to glorify and praise God? Is it to be sacrificial to each other? But we're all susceptible. I mean, that's really what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
we can all end up being buy-ins. Depends on the week. You know, when we show up at church and we think, you know what, this is, you know, I'm having a bad day and church was not very helpful to me.
Yeah.
Why should I go back?
Right. Well, to a certain extent, I think we don't want to say that Christians are going to be buy-ins in the sense that buy-in is not a Christian.
We all have that attitude. We are susceptible to that attitude.
Yeah. I mean, can we fall away from, yes, we can. But buy-in, the person that Bunyan is describing with buy-in is not a Christian. He is someone who is turning people away. At least as I'm reading it, right? He's someone who is not really truly following Christ.
Oh, right. Yes.
Right.
Oh.
But we can have a sinful attitude like buy-end on certain times. We can become lazy. We can become infatuated with wealth until we're slapped upside the head and say, hey, you know, by good elders or good brothers or sisters in Christ, say, hey, you're turning, you need to refocus here. So we can do that. Certainly we can be tempted by these same things that buy-end is offering. But I think we need to, you know, there's also a corrective here for those that might be tempted. You know, this is not the direction to go in. This is not the way. And Bunyan is showing us that.
Yeah. So I guess Christian gave the best response of, you know, you're willing to be there in the good times. Are you willing to be there in the bad times? And that's what we can all ask ourselves. Are we willing to follow Christ in good and bad times? So the end result, of course, in this situation is, Bayan's waits. He stops. Fine, go on. And Christian and Hopeful, they go on ahead. And then Bayan's follows from a distance in the back. And it's interesting.
He's just there, kind of like
that. He's following him. But make my spine tingle. You know, people are following me. But that's Christian. Christian understands as well that, you know, this is, again, the discipleship aspect, the wisdom that the Christian has gained is there are times when you speak to a fool in his folly and there's times when you don't. And he had come, they spoke to him and there was no more conversation need to be had.
Yeah.
You move on.
Well, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. You can find us at reformforum.org. And remember, while you're there, that we are listener-supported, and so check out the donate page and see how you might donate to the Reformed Forum and all of the really excellent content that is produced there. Notice that there are three regular podcasts, Christ the Center, Proclaiming Christ, as well as Theology Simply Profound. And you also find a great deal of content on the site itself, written content. And so check that information out and see how you might be able to donate to this ongoing work of Reformed Forum. And if you want to check out the congregation that Rob and I serve, you can go to westminsteropc.org. Or if you're in the Chicagoland area looking for an OPC congregation, go to chicagoreformed.org. Rob, you already gave us a hint, but what's up next time?
Well, next time, Bayan strikes back.
From the New Hope to Bayan strikes back. Well, again, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Until next time.